ॐ अजनचमदन्दस्य जलाजलाशलकाय चक्षुषमिलितानि येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थपितं येन विठले सायमृपकदमयं ददति सफलाधिकम्. Yesterday we heard how of the specific methodologies of the Payovrata by which Krishna will be pleased. And this prayers were offered, some austerity was performed, charity was given, deity worship was executed. But the essence was devotion. The activity was done according to the higher order of Lord Brahma for the pleasure of Krishna. And Krishna said that this would satisfy him. This is the essence of all sacrifices, the essence of all austerities. Because ultimately Krishna must be satisfied, must in the sense of it is the purpose really of everything, to satisfy Krishna. So after hearing of the methodology, Sukadev Goswami continued speaking to Maharaj Prakrit, text 1, chapter 17, canto 8. O King, Sukadev Goswami said, after Aditi was advised by her husband Kashyapa Muni, she strictly followed his instructions without laziness, and in this way performed the Payovrata ritualistic ceremony. Purport. For advancement in anything, especially in spiritual life, one must strictly follow the bona fide instructions of the teacher. Aditi did this. She strictly followed the instructions of her husband and guru. As confirmed in the Vedic injunctions, yasya devi parabhaktir yata devi tata garo. One should have complete faith in the guru who helps the disciple make progress in spiritual life. As soon as the disciple thinks independently, not caring for the instructions of the spiritual master, he is a failure. Yasya prasada nagati katopi. Destination unknown. Aditi very strictly followed the instructions of her husband and spiritual master, and thus she was successful. She performed the Payovrata ceremony. With full undiverted attention, this is text 2 and 3, Aditi thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So she was so focused on doing this for Krishna's pleasure, exactly in the way that Kashyapa Muni had prescribed. In this way, by doing it in this way, she brought under full control her mind and senses, which resembled forceful horses. What a nice parallel to describe the, or a metaphor to describe the mind and the senses, like horses. Because horses are very powerful, they're fast, and they're independent. Forceful, wild horses who are going this way and that according to their desires. So she brought them under control. The minds are compared to the reins in the Vedic literature that bring the horses under control. But if the horses or the senses are out of control, the mind becomes out of control, and the reins get pulled whichever way the horses wish to go. The mind goes whatever way the senses wish to go. And ultimately, if the senses are uncontrolled and the mind or the reins get pulled, then the carriage that the driver and the passenger sitting upon, they will come to ruination. So it is important to bring the mind and senses under control. So Aditi did this due to her determination. She concentrated her mind upon the Supreme Lord Vasudev. Thus she performed the ritualistic ceremony known as Payovrata. Prabhupada's purport. This is the process of Bhakti Yoga. Anya vilasita sanyam gyanakama anavrita anukulena krishna nushilam bhakti uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably. That means with a thinking about him and serving him in a mood to please him, as opposed to the thinking about him that Kamsa was doing with a mood to kill him. So in a favorable mood, not in a pratikul or unfavorable mood, but favorable mood towards Krishna, one should think about him, render service, and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. One simply has to concentrate upon the lotus feet of Vasudev Krishna. Savai mana Krishna pararavindayor. Then the mind and senses will be controlled and one can engage himself fully in the devotional service of the Lord. The devotee does not need to practice the Hatha Yoga system to control the mind and senses. His mind and senses are automatically controlled because of unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So this is the process of controlling the mind. Pure devotional service, to be purely immersed in wishing to please Krishna. So by definition, if one is always thinking of pleasing Krishna, one's mind is focused on Krishna. The content of one's mind is Krishna, and that's the perfection of the controlled mind. Spontaneously controlled mind always thinks of Krishna in great love and devotion, like the residents of Vrindavan. And the other methods of controlling the mind, they are neutral methods. There's the watching of the breath. There's the slowing down of the mind, almost stopping the mind from its actions. But soon as the mind speeds up, or soon as the attention is moved from the breath, then the mind has no content to fill itself with, and then it naturally falls under the control of the senses again. But this is the process, unalloyed devotional service. How wonderful. But if one isn't practicing unalloyed devotional service, then what will happen? Then one's senses and mind are going to be out of control, and one will get so much trouble from the senses and mind. So it behooves one to really try, if one focuses his mind and makes his determination to please Krishna, to surrender to and please Krishna. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulasya varjanam rakshishya titti visvaso goptrite varanam tata atma vichepta karpanye sadvidam saranagati. This is the process of pleasing Krishna by surrendering to him, just always being engaged in a pleasant way, in a favorable way, in doing what is satisfying to Krishna. This is bhakti yoga. This is Bhagavad Dharma. This is Krishna consciousness. This is pure devotional service. And if one has that mood in performing devotional service, even if by previous habit he does something wrong, Krishna immediately forgives him. Krishna immediately overlooks that. Apichet sudarachiro bhajate mamananyavak sadho eva, Krishna says. Such a person who is practicing such undeviated ananya bhakti is sadhu. Sadhu eva, certainly a sadhu. So this is the secret. And it's an open secret. Open and easy to understand, and if one doesn't want to give himself fully to Krishna, although it's easy to understand, it is very hard to do. My dear King, Sukadev continues, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, dressed in yellow garments and bearing a conch shell, disc, club and lotus in his how many hands?
Four.
Yes. Then appeared before Aditi. So immediately by performing the Payovrata, the Lord came. Just just see how wonderful devotion is, because a ditti fully focused on Krishna. So when anything is fully focused, when our consciousness is focused, then it's very powerful. If one is bahushaka tvanantascha budayo avyasayinam, if one is very is many branched in his desires, then there's a lack of power due to that focus, lack of focus. So look at the result. What did she do? She worshipped the deity. She did a little austerity. She wasn't even fasting for that time. She was fasting in the sense of only eating, drinking milk. But look at the result. In 12 days, the Lord Himself appeared before her. How wonderful. This is Krishna's reciprocation. He truly was pleased by this sacrifice, by this ritual, payavrata, by this vrata, this vow. He was so pleased that he himself came before her. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead became visible to Aditi's eyes, Aditi was so overwhelmed by transcendental bliss that she at once stood up and then fell to the ground like a rod to offer the Lord her respectful obeisances. Usually we don't hear of Mataji's paying dandavats in that way. But in her ecstasy, she didn't think of herself as a Mataji. She just as ecstatically fell down on the ground to offer full respects to the Lord. Aditi stood silently with folded hands, unable to offer prayers to the Lord. Why? Because she was stunned in ecstasy. Because of transcendental bliss, tears filled her eyes, and the hairs on her body stood on end. Because she could see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, she felt ecstasy and her body trembled. This was the Lord's mercy due to His pleasure with her, being pleased with her. O Maharaj Prikit, the demigoddess, Aditi then began offering her prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a faltering voice and with great love. She appeared as though drinking through her eyes the Supreme Lord. She was relishing, tasting through her eyes. Usually we don't taste through our eyes or drink through our eyes, but she was drinking through her eyes the sweetness, the sweet tastiness of the Lord, who is the husband of the goddess of fortune, very opulent, the enjoyer of all sacrificial ceremonies, bhuktaram jagatapasyam, and the master and lord of the entire universe, sarvaloka maheshwara. He had appeared before her. That one whom everyone was worshipping through all the Vedic sacrifices, who is the master, controller, creator, and ultimately destroyer of the universe, in reciprocation for her 12, 13 days of devotional service, he came before her. Because of her devotion. The goddess Aditi said, three prayers, three verses of prayers. O master and enjoyer of all sacrificial ceremonies, O infallible and most famous person, whose name when chanted spreads all good fortune. O original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Supreme Controller, shelter of all holy places, you are the shelter of all poor suffering living entities. You are the shelter of all poor suffering living entities. And you have appeared to diminish our suffering. Please be kind to us and spread our good fortune. So she was hinting already at what her desire was. The spreading of our good fortune means the removal of the asuras headed by Bali Maharaj from the position of ruling heavenly planets and replacing them with the rightful rulers, her relatives, her sons, the demigods. Spread our good fortune. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the master of those who observe vows and austerities, and it is He who bestows benedictions upon them. He is worshipable for the devotee throughout the devotee's life, for He never breaks His promises. As He says in the Bhagavad Gita, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. The Lord is addressed here as Achyuta, the infallible, because he takes care of his devotees. Anyone inimical to the devotees is certainly vanquished by the mercy of the Lord. The Lord is the source of the Ganges water, and therefore he is addressed here as Tirthapad, indicating that all the holy places are at his lotus feet, or that whatever he touches with his lotus foot becomes a holy place. Bhagavad Gita, for example, begins with the words Dharma Chetre Kuru Chetre. Because the Lord was present on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, it became Dharma Chetra, place of pilgrimage. Therefore, the Pandavas, who were extremely religious, were assured of victory. Any place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead displays his pastimes, such as Mathura, so many places, becomes a holy place wherever the Lord has displayed his pastimes. The chanting of the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare, is pleasing to the ear, and it expands the good fortune to the audience who hears it chanted. Owing to the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Aditi was fully assured that the troublesome condition created for her by the demons would now be ended. She continued with her prayer. My Lord, you are the all-pervading universal form, the fully independent creator, maintainer, and destroyer of this universe. Although you engage your energy in matter, you are always situated in your original form and never fall from that position, for you are never bewildered by illusion. Oh, my Lord, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So Krishna is always Krishna. He is not, his energies are transformed, but he is never transformed in the material world. Purport. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, Siddhanta balaya chitte nakare kara alasa, iha hiti krishne lage sudhrita manasa. Anyone trying to become fully Krishna conscious must know the Lord's glories as far as they are possible to understand. Here Aditi hints at these glories. The universe is nothing but the external potency of the Lord. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.4. Maya tatamidam savam. Whatever we see in this universe is but an expansion of the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as the sunshine and heat all over the universe are expansions of the sun. So this Lord who is everywhere, everything is expanding from him, the whole universe, with all the stars and all the space, all the planets, and everything and every planet is expanded from his energy, and yet he is separate, not even touching this material world. He's aloof from it. And that same Lord, who is always transcendental, has come to Aditi because of her strong devotion and her desire. When one surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he surpasses the influence of the illusory energy. For the Supreme Lord, being fully wise and being situated in the heart of everyone, especially in the heart of the devotee, gives one intelligence by which one is sure never to fall into illusion. Didami buddhi yogam tam yena mamupayanti te. He gives the intelligence by which one can come to him. Pritti purvagam, when one worships him with devotion. Our final prayer, O unlimited one, if your lordship is satisfied, one can very easily obtain a lifetime as long as that of Lord Brahma. A body either in the upper, lower, or middle planetary systems, unlimited material opulence, religion, economic development, and satisfaction of the senses, full transcendental knowledge, and the 8 yogic perfections, what to speak of such petty achievements as conquering one's rivals. She doesn't say any more. But she also did not mention what the Lord can ultimately give, which is, by his mercy, one can go to the spiritual world and become his associate in Goloka Vrindavan. Because her mind wasn't on that. She was looking for a benediction in the material world. And Kasyapa Muni He saw this as a wondrous thing. And if one thinks about it, it's so wonderful that Krishna has come. And one could also see it as a pastime. But look what she's asking for. She's asking for her, for the conquering of her rivals. She could have asked to go to the spiritual world. She could have asked for all Indra to go to the spiritual world and live in Goloka Vrindavan. But look what she's asking for. Some material benediction. Pastimes, but still, we shouldn't be like that. Text 11. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King Prickett, best of all, best of the Bharata dynasty, when the lotus-eyed Lord, the supersoul of all living entities, was thus worshipped by Aditi, he replied as follows. So there's 8 verses, or 9 verses in reply. The Supreme Personality of God had said, O Mother of the Demigods, I have already understood your long-cherished desires for the welfare of your sons, who have been deprived of all opulences and driven from their residence by their enemies. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead being situated in everyone's heart, and especially in the heart of his devotees, is always ready to help his devotee in adversity. Since he knows everything, he knows how things are to be adjusted, and he does the needful to relieve the suffering of his devotee. O Devi, the Lord continued, O Goddess, I can understand that you want to regain your sons and be together with them and worship, to worship me after defeating the enemies in battle and retrieving your abode in opulence. It's because the demigods all went, they went missing, they went invisible and disappeared from the heavenly planets. You want to see the wives of the demons lamenting for the death of their husbands when those demons, the enemies of your sons, are killed in battle by the demigods, of whom Indra is the chief. You want your sons to regain their lost reputation and opulence and live again on the heavenly planet as usual. O Mother of the Demigods, in my opinion, almost all the chiefs of the demons are now unconquerable. He's saying how they can't be defeated now. For they are being protected by Brahmanas, whom the Supreme Lord always favors. Thus, the use of power against them now will not at all be a source of happiness. Purport. When a person is favored by Brahmins and Vaishnavas, no one can defeat him. Even the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not interfere when one is protected by a Brahmana. It is said, Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. The Lord's first inclination is to give all benedictions to the cows and Brahmanas. Therefore, if Brahmanas favor someone, the Lord does not interfere, nor can anyone interfere with the happiness of such a person. Yet, the Lord said to Aditi, because I have been satisfied by the activities of your vow, O Goddess Aditi, I must find some means to favor you. For worship of me never goes in vain, but certainly gives the desired result according to what one deserves. You have prayed to me and properly worshipped me by performing the great Payovrata ceremony for the sake of protecting your sons. Because of Kasyapa Muni's austerities, I shall agree to become your son and thus protect your other sons. Always thinking of me as being situated within the body of your husband, Kasyapa, go worship your husband who has been purified by his austerity. O lady, even if someone inquires, you should not disclose this fact to anyone. That which is very confidential is successful if kept a secret. So the Lord said that he would, indirectly said, that he would become the son of Kasyapa Muni and Aditi. And this son of Kasyapa Muni and Aditi, who will, in his own way, cause the defeat of the demons and in his own way return the kingdom of heaven back to the demigods, he will become the son of Aditi as Lord Vamandev. How wonderful! Aditi wanted something completely material, and what does she get? She gets But actually the Lord did say that it was so that they could worship him all together. So there were, it wasn't fully material because the demigods are devotees. But yet, in reciprocation with her desire, her devotional desire, the Lord agreed to become a son. Such a big benediction. Because as it's true what Aditi said, to defeat the enemies is very easy for the Lord. But to become the son of someone is very wonderful and very rare. So he reciprocated with her simple desire with something extraordinarily wonderful. After speaking in this way, Sukadeva Goswami said, the Supreme Personality of God had disappeared from that very spot. Aditi, having received the extremely valuable benediction that the Lord would appear as a son, considered herself very successful, and with great devotion, she approached her husband. Being situated in a meditational trance, Kasyapa Muni, whose vision is never mistaken, could see that a plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead had entered within him. O King, as the wind promotes friction between two pieces of wood, and thus gives rise to fire, Kasyapa Muni, whose transcendental position was fully absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, transferred his potency into the womb of Aditi. Prabhupada's purport. He's going to explain this analogy. Interesting. The wind promotes friction between two pieces of wood and thus gives rise to fire. Wind, wood, fire. How is that parallel to the Lord's appearance? Prabhupada will explain. A forest fire begins when two pieces of wood rub against one another, being agitated by the wind. Actually, however, fire belongs neither to the wood nor the wind. It is always different from both. Similarly, here it is to be understood that the union of Kasyapa Muni and Aditi was not like the sexual intercourse of ordinary human beings. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has nothing to do with the human secretions of sexual intercourse. He is always completely aloof from such material combinations. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Samaham Savabhuteshu, I am equal toward all living entities. Nonetheless, to protect the devotees and kill the demons who are a disturbing element, the Lord entered the womb of Aditi. Therefore, this is a transcendental pastime of the Lord. This should not be misunderstood. One should not think that the Lord became the son of Aditi the way an ordinary child is born because of sexual intercourse between man and woman. Here it may also be appropriate to explain, in these days of controversy, the origin of life. So Prabhupada is going to describe as a matter of course, as an extra point, where life comes from. The life force of the living entity, the soul, is different from the ovum and semen of the human being. Although the conditioned soul has nothing to do with the reproductive cells of man and woman, he is placed into the proper situation because of his work, kamana dhaiva netrena, under the supervision of higher powers, according to one's work. Life is not, however, a product of two secretions, but is independent of all material elements. As first described in Bhagavad Gita, the living entity is not subject to any material reactions. He can neither be burned by fire, cut by sharp weapons, moistened by water, nor dried by the air. He is completely different from the physical elements, but by a superior arrangement he is put into these material elements. He is always aloof from material contact, asango yayam purusha, but because he is placed in a material condition, he suffers the reactions of the material modes of nature. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti janaya karanam gunasangasya sarasadjuni janmasu. The living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of material nature, the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil amongst various species. So the living entity, because of his tendency to enjoy, he is placed in a particular situation in the material world according to his previous work, his karma, under superior direction, And he, what happens? Due to his association with the modes of material nature and his enjoying spirit, he is entangled and is forced to take birth and death and birth and death and birth and death. So what is the origin of life, actually? The origin of life is life itself, the soul. It's not the combination of chemicals. It's not the combination of the semen and the ovum. The origin of life is the soul, which is eternal, which is wonderful. Although the living entity is aloof from the material elements, he is put into material conditions, and thus he must suffer the reactions of material activities. So naturally, of course, we wish to get out of that position. Accept this philosophy and wish to get out and work to get out and pray to get out. So the Lord was about to descend as Vamandev, as the son of Kasyapa Muni and Aditi. When Lord Brahma understood that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was now within the womb of Aditi, he began to offer prayers to the Lord by reciting transcendental names. This was his methodology of prayer. The Supreme Personality of Godhead exists everywhere. Anantarastha paramanutayantarastham. Therefore, when one chants his transcendental names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is automatically pleased by such sankirtan. It is not that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is absent. He is present there. And when a devotee utters the transcendental name, it is not a material sound. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is naturally pleased. A devotee knows that the Lord is present everywhere and that one can please him by simply chanting his holy name. So that's the proper mood to chant in while one's chanting, to chant in the mood of chanting for Krishna's pleasure. Everything done for Krishna's pleasure. So Brahma offers his prayers. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, all glories unto you, who are glorified by all and whose activities are all uncommon. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, O Lord of the Transcendentalist, controller of the three modes of nature. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you again and again. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, the all-pervading Lord Vishnu, who invented the cause of the hearts of all living entities. All the three worlds resides within your navel, yet you are above the three worlds. This is wonderful. Everything is within his navel, but yet he is above everything. Formerly you appeared as the son of Prishnigarbha, and who did the Lord benedict in the form of Prishnigarbha? Anyone know? Yes, someone knows. Dhruva Maharaj. Formerly you appeared as the son of Prishni. To you, the supreme creator, who were understood only through Vedic knowledge, I offer my respectful obeisances. O my Lord, you are the beginning, the manifestation, and the ultimate dissolution of the three worlds. And you are celebrated in the Vedas as the reservoir of unlimited potencies, the Supreme Person. O my Lord, as waves attract branches and leaves that have fallen into deep water, you, the Supreme Eternal Time Factor, attract everything in this universe. My Lord, you are the original generator of all living entities, stationary or moving. And you are also the generator of the Prajapatis, those who generate other living entities. O my Lord, as a boat is the only hope for a person drowning in the water, you are the only shelter for the demigods who are now bereft of their heavenly position. So he was encouraging the Lord to go on with this wonderful business of reinstating the demigods in their position. And Lord Vamadeva will do this in a wonderful way. So now we'll go on to this, the end of Prabhupada's of this chapter in Prabhupada's purports. Now the next chapter, chapter 18, text 1. Sukadeva Goswami said, after Lord Brahma had thus spoken, glorifying the Supreme Lord's activities and prowess, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was never subject to death like an ordinary living being, appeared from the womb of Aditi. So his appearance is not ordinary. His disappearance is not ordinary. Like a magician, when Krishna leaves this world, it's like a magician who gets himself sawed in half, or he can disappear or something like that, or he can die before the audience and then he'll bring himself back to life, because it's not actually at all ordinary. So this is important that we remember this, because the Lord is going to come, and he's going to come as a dwarf Brahmin, but not ordinary, fully transcendental, although appearing as if a human in a human-like way. He is extraordinary, and he'll perform extraordinary activities. So the Lord appeared from the womb of Aditi. His four hands were decorated with a conch shell, club, lotus, and disc. He was dressed in yellow garments, and his eyes appeared like the petals of a blooming lotus. So beautiful. We'll read from half of Prabhupada's purport, the second half, telling again that the Lord's birth and activities has nothing to do with the material world. And just by knowing this, janma karma cha me dibyam evam yo vikti tatvata, by knowing this, one is finished with birth and death in this material world. One is liberated. So Prabhupada explains, one should try to understand that the Lord's appearance and disappearance and his activities are all dibyam, or transcendental. The Lord has nothing to do with material activities. One who understands the appearance, disappearance, and activities of the Lord is immediately liberated. After giving up his body, he never again has to accept a material body, but is transferred to the spiritual world. Tatvadeham punajanma naiti mameti sarjana. So Lord Vamandeva has appeared. What did he look like? The body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, blackish in complexion. Oh, this is in his form at this point. Not in the form of Vaman. He was blackish in complexion, was free from all inebrieties. His lotus face, decorated with earrings resembling sharks, makar, appeared very beautiful, and on his bosom was the mark of Srivats. He wore bangles on his wrists, armlets on his arms, a helmet on his head, a belt in his waist, a sacred thread across his chest, and ankle bells decorating his lotus feet. An uncommonly beautiful garland of flowers decorated his bosom, and because the flowers were extremely fragrant, a large group of bees, making their natural humming sound, invaded them for honey. When the Lord appeared wearing the Kastuba gem on his necklace, on his neck, his effulgence vanquished the darkness in the home of Prajapati Kasyapa. At that time there was happiness in all directions, in the reservoirs of water like the rivers and oceans, and in the core of everyone's heart. The various seasons displayed their respective qualities, and all living entities in the upper planetary system, in outer space, and on the surface of the earth were jubilant. The demigods, the cows, the Brahmins, and the hills and mountains were all filled with joy. So the Lord appeared, and joy was everywhere. And this is when he appeared. That's what he looked like when he appeared. And when? On the day of Shravan Dwadasi, the 12th day of the bright fortnight of the month of Bhadra, when the moon came into the lunar mansion of Shravan, at the auspicious moment of Abhijit. Abhijit means at midday. And Shravan is very, very auspicious constellation of stars called Nakshatra. So that Shravan is very, very auspicious in that. The Lord appeared in this universe just at midday. Considering the Lord's appearance very auspicious, all the stars and planets from the sun to Saturn were munificently charitable. So they were in position in auspicious ways. O King, when the Lord appeared on Dwadasi, the 12th day of the moon, the sun was at the meridian, as every learned scholar knows. This Dwadasi is called Vijay Ekadasi. Conch shells, kettle drums, excuse me, yes, this Dwadasi is called Vijay Dwadasi. Conch shells, kettle drums, drums, panavas, and anakas vibrated in concert. The sound of these and various other instruments was tumultuous. Being very pleased, the celestial dancing girls, the apsaras, danced in jubilation. The best of the Gandharvas sang songs, and the great sages, demigods, manus, pittas, and fire gods offered prayers to satisfy the Lord. The siddhas, vidyadharas, kimpurushas, kinaras, charanas, yakshas, rakshasas, suparnas, the best of serpents, and the followers of the demigods all showered flowers on Aditi's residence, covering the entire house, while glorifying and praising the Lord and dancing. When Aditi saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared from her own womb, having accepted a transcendental body by his own spiritual potency, she was struck with wonder and was very happy. Upon seeing the child, Prajapati Kasyapa explained Jai Jai in great happiness and wonder. The Lord appeared in his original form with ornaments and weapons in his hand. Although this ever-existing form is not visible in the material world, he nonetheless appeared in this form. Then, in the presence of his father and mother, he assumed the form of Vamana, a Brahmana dwarf, a brahmachari, just like a theatrical actor. Purport. The word Nataha is significant. Nata means an actor. An actor changes dress to play different parts, but is always the same man. Similarly, as described in the Brahma Samhita, the Lord assumes many thousands and millions of forms. Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Anantarupam Adhyam Purana Purusham. He is always present with innumerable incarnations. Ramadi Murtishu Kalaniyamena Tishtan Nanavataram Akarod Bhuvanesha Kintu. Nonetheless, although he appears in various incarnations, they are not different from one another. But he doesn't accept a form in the sense of he is something different than that form. No, he accepts a form and he remains always that form. He's eternally that form. He accepts a mood, a particular mood, and an eternal form to go with that mood. He is the same person with the same potency, the same eternity, and the same spiritual existence. But he can simultaneously assume various forms, and all of them are eternal. When Vamadeva appeared from the womb of his mother, he appeared in the form of Narayan, with four hands equipped with the necessary symbolic weapons, and then immediately transformed himself into a brahmachari, Vatu. This means that his body is not material. One who thinks that the Supreme Lord assumes a material body is not intelligent. He has to learn more about the Lord's position. So it's not that he assumes so many forms as an actor assumes so many dresses, and these all temporary, and he discards them after a while, and therefore the Lord assumes a material body, and he himself is actually impersonal. This is straight Mayavad philosophy. But this is not the situation. The Lord doesn't have a material form. Because the Mayavadis say that when Krishna comes into the material world, he's formless. And then when he comes into the material world, he assumes a body made of the mode of goodness. And then he becomes the Ishwara, the controller. Straight Mayavad philosophy. But that's not the philosophy. That's not what happened. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, he doesn't have a material body. Janma karma chame dubyam evam yoveti tatvata. One has to understand the transcendental appearance of the Lord in his original transcendental body, Satchidananda Vigraha. So he has a transcendental body. When the great sages saw the Lord as the brahmachari dwarf Vamana, they were certainly very pleased. Thus they placed before them Kasyapa Muni, the Prajapati, and performed all the ritualistic ceremonies such as the birthday ceremony. At the sacred thread ceremony of Vamandev, the sun god personally uttered the Gayatri mantra. Brihaspati offered the sacred thread and Kasyapa Muni offered a straw belt. Mother Earth gave him a deer skin, and the demigod of the moon, who is the king of the forest, gave him a Brahmadanda, the rod of a brahmachari. His mother Aditi gave him a cloth for underwear. And the deity presiding over the heavenly kingdom offered him an umbrella. O king, Lord Brahma offered a water pot to the inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead. The seven sages offered him kusha grass, and Mother Saraswati gave him a string of rudraksha beads. When Vamandeva had thus been given the sacred thread, Kuvera, the king of the Yakshas, gave him a pot for begging alms, and Mother Bhagavati, the wife of Lord Shiva, and most chaste mother of the entire universe, gave him his first alms. Having thus been welcomed by everyone, Lord Vamanadev, the best of the brahmacharis, exhibited his Brahman effulgence. Thus he surpassed in beauty that entire assembly, which was filled with great saint brahmanas. After Lord Sri Vamandev set a sacrificial fire, he offered worship and performed the fire sacrifice on the sacrificial field. When the Lord heard that Balimaraj was performing an Aswamedha sacrifices under the patronage of Brahmins belonging to the Bhrigu dynasty, the Supreme Lord, who is full in every respect, proceeded there to show his mercy to Balimaraj. By his weight, he pushed down the earth with every step. So he appeared as if a little Brahmin boy, very, very effulgent and very beautiful, very attractively effulgent. But he wasn't a little Brahmin boy at all. His body was composed of Satchidananda, of eternity bliss and knowledge. And by his weight, he stepped down on the earth, and he pushed the earth down with every step. And there, this Lord who is so powerful that he can do these things, he's going to beg from Balimaraj. He has a particular pastime in mind. While engaged in performing the sacrifice in the field known as Bhrigu Kacha on the northern bank of the Narmada River, the Brahminical priest, the descendants of Bhrigu, saw Vamandev to be like the sun rising nearby. So Vamandev was coming. O king, because of Vamandev's bright effulgence, the priests, along with Balimaraj and all the members of the assembly, were robbed of their splendor. Thus they began to ask one another whether the sun god himself, Sanat Kumar, or the fire god had personally come to see the sacrificial ceremony. While the priests of the Bhrigu dynasty and their disciples talked and argued in various ways, who is this coming? What wondrous being who is so effulgent is coming? Who is it? The sun god, the great brahmachari Sanat Kumar? Who is coming? So while they were speaking in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamandev, holding in his hands the rod, the umbrella, and a water pot full of water, entered the arena of the Aswamedha sacrifice. Because Balimaraj was performing the sacrifice to maintain his dominion over the kingdom of heaven. So appearing as a Brahmin boy, wearing a belt of straw, a sacred thread, an upper garment of deerskin, and matted locks of hair, Lord Vamandev entered the arena of sacrifice. His brilliant effulgence diminished the brilliance of all the priests and their disciples, who thus stood from their seats and welcomed the Lord properly by offering obeisances. Balimaraj, jubilant at seeing Lord Vamandev, whose beautiful limbs contributed equally to the beauty of his entire body, offered him a seat with great satisfaction. Thus offering a proper reception to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always beautiful to the liberated souls, Balimaraj worshipped him by washing his lotus feet. Lord Shiva, the best of the demigods, who carries on his forehead the emblem of the moon, receives on his head with great devotion the Ganges water emanating from the toe of Vishnu. Being aware of religious principles, Balimaraj knew this. Consequently, following the footsteps of Lord Shiva, he also placed on his head the water that had washed the Lord's lotus feet. So he washed his lotus feet and took the water and put it upon his head. Balimaraj then said to Lord Vamandev, O Brahmana, I offer you my hearty welcome and my respectful obeisances. Please let us know what we may do for you. We think of you as the personified austerity of the great Brahmin sages. O my Lord, because you have kindly arrived at our home, All my forefathers are satisfied. Our family and entire dynasty have been sanctified, and the sacrifice we are performing is now complete because of your presence. O son of a Brahmana, today the fire of sacrifice is ablaze according to the injunctions of the Shastra, and I have been freed from all the sinful reactions of my life by the water that has washed your lotus feet. O my Lord, by the touch of your small lotus feet, the entire surface of the world has been sanctified. O son of a Brahmana, it appears that you have come here to ask me for something. He had his begging bowl with him. Therefore, whatever you want, you may take from me. O best of those who are worshipable, you may take from me a cow, gold, a furnished house, palatable food and drink, the daughter of a Brahmin for your wife, prosperous villages, horses, elephants, chariots, or whatever you desire. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 18th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Vamanadeva, the Dwarf Incarnate. So Bahai Maharaj has just offered the Brahmana, who is the Lord, Brahmana Vamanadeva, you've come to ask something in charity. Here I am performing this sacrifice. I am a Kshatriya. Kshatriya's household of Kshatriya's business is to give charity. What do you want? I will give you whatever you want. Whatever you desire, I will give you. Now the excitement will begin. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Lord Vamanadeva ki jai. Any questions or comments? But the first thing he did when he appeared, practically speaking, was to manifest an incredible effulgence. So he was so effulgent and powerful. He was very, very, very attractive. And Bali Maharaj became attracted to him. Everyone became attracted to him.
They thought maybe he's the sun god, maybe he's somebody else. But they never would have thought that he's not another Brahman boy. He is addressed him as Brahman boy. But he was so impressed by him.
Yes, because of his effulgence. His effulgence is like charisma. Charisma means power.
Everything he was, whatever he was doing, whatever things were happening, more or less, they were suspended. Just welcome this small boy.
But he wasn't just a small boy.
Because he was Brahman.
But not just because he was Brahman, because there were other priests there. And everyone's, even though they were such powerful priests, these weren't ordinary people. These were such powerful, these were descendants of Bhrigu Muni directly. And they were effulgent. But when he came, it's like when the sun is out, and you can't see the stars. So the sun diminished, the sun of Vamandev diminished all the potency, and everyone was awed by him. What do you think? After all, if the Lord comes and wants to attract everyone, who will not be attracted?
Yes.
No. Yes, but no.
No.
Yes, yes.
I'm saying that they didn't know who he is, but they just were impressed or attracted by him.
Yes. Yes. And also, it was just at the time. He came just at the time where charity is given in the sacrifice. It seems like there's different things allowed at different times. So he came just at the time by divine arrangement. And also, when he walked, remember, he pushed down the earth. So this was no ordinary little dwarf boy. We don't know. But they saw his effulgence. When someone is, if someone very powerful walks in, even though We may not know who they are, but if they're very, very powerful, immediately we become attracted. If they have an opulence, a deep opulence, everyone's mind will go there.
That's what happened when they passed through.
And he wasn't
the
even...
The chef and the sages were sitting, all of them struck.
Yes.
And he was just 16 years old.
Yeah. Power. Yes. These personalities and power, their power comes from their purity. Purity means that they have no amal. They have no mal. They're amal. They have no impurities, no material contamination. So certainly Krishna has no material.
In this case, maybe they have already heard Shukadeva Maharaj's position, procedures and other things. And they would have heard that he was blasting us.
But Vyasadeva was right there also.
Yes. Even Brahma.
And even Narada Muni was there. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Hare Krishna, thank you. So tomorrow, Krishna willing, we shall move onward.